Assalamu alaikum, everybody. Thank you for joining us for Evening Chai with JSS. We are Jafri Support Services. And this is an event that we held last year. We had part one last year, and we are back again by popular demand for part two. We are talking today about Islam and the role of a father in today's world. And we have a lecture and then a discussion and Q&A with our esteemed guest, Sayyid Asad Jafri. The event today is slated to go on about 2 hours. We're going to wrap up at around 10:15 p.m. But of course, it all depends on you. We do want active audience participation, and I'll be giving out a Mentee code at the end. You can probably see it on the screen as well, but I will be reminding you at the end what that is. And please do keep your questions coming in. Like I said, this is very much audience participation, and we're really excited to continue with your questions like we had last year. So I mentioned that this is brought to you by Jafri Support Services. And Jafri Support Services is a community-based social services organization committed to enhancing the social fabric of our community through educational workshops, professional counseling services, seminars, and youth-led events. The type of counseling services that JSS is involved in are things like marriage, parenting, communication, relationships, childhood trauma, sexual, physical, and emotional abuse, mental health counseling like stress, anxiety, depression, or PTSD. They also deal with substance use and addiction, loneliness and isolation, gender identity and personality, or even religious and spiritual challenges. There are a few branches of JSS. Alhamdulillah, we are quite a large organization now. We do have an arm that deals with financial assistance for those in need. Also, there is a special needs support network and Mommy Connections as well, which is a very vibrant and active group in the community. And of course, Shia Matchmakers. Some of the initiatives that JSS has run in the past and continues to run are fertility support groups, parent drop-in sessions, marriage prep workshops, family games and trivia nights, the role of a father part one we did last year. I'm hoping many of you attended that and are back again for part two this year. We do have a registered psychotherapist on staff, and she is a psychosocial services coordinator and a mental health consultant. Any information that you would deal with Sakina with is actually confidential. Her numbers are on the screen, and I'll read them out if you are visually impaired. They are 905-695-1579, or you can reach her on her cell at 647-298-1556. Her email is sakinaqasim, with a Q, at jafri.org. As I mentioned, tonight we do want audience participation, so please keep your questions coming in. If you go to menti.com and enter the code 5352-5357, we'll be able to see your questions, and we'll pose them, of course, to Sayyid Asad. Now, Sayyid Asad needs no introduction, but for those of you who may be joining in from somewhere other than our local area, I'm going to let you know who he is. Sayyid Asad was born and raised in Toronto, Canada, and after completing his bachelor's in the IT field, he pursued his Hawza studies in Qom in 2004, earning a second bachelor's degree in the field of Quranic sciences. He's currently pursuing his master's degree in Islamic studies as well as in Quranic sciences. Sayyid Asad currently resides in Toronto, where he serves the greater Islamic community. And you can see his Instagram and Twitter handles on the screen. So without further ado, I'm going to ask Sayyid Asad to begin our evening with a short lecture. And then after that, we will get into the Q&A.
Thank you very much, Sister Kaniz. May Allah bless you and your team. I always mention this, and I'll mention it before I start. I'm a huge advocate of the work that JSS does, and working with them for the past couple of years, I think that I've learned to realize that that sincerity is a huge part of success. These are sincere individuals who wish nothing but to help the community out. You can see the extensiveness of their work, and I think that they've probably been quite busy the past couple of years with the pandemic, and so if you can, whenever you can, support JSS. They are an amazing team for us here in the local area and for those who are abroad as well. A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajeem. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. الحمد لله رب العالمين وبه نستعين وهو خير الناصر ومعين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. And welcome to part two of our discussion on the role of a father through the lens of Islam. We did part one, I think, almost to the day a year ago. So it's been a whole year since we've had part one, and I had to go back and go through my discussion in part one to make sure that it's not a complete and absolute a repeat. We talked about a lot during that first session, and I wanted to go through a little bit of a different lens tonight. As was mentioned, this program is 2 hours in length, and there's no way that I'm going to put you through the punishment of having to hear me for 2 hours. I will maybe speak for half an hour, and then, of course, I think what is the success of programs like this is to hear from the audience. So I get a good idea of what is going on inside the homes, inside the hearts of some individuals. When we had part one of this discussion, it was in the middle of the pandemic. And so, you know, a lot of things were very fluid. They're very dynamic. They were changing. The center, the community, the schools, et cetera, workplaces. So there's a lot of change happening inside the homes as well. We now find ourselves a little bit in a different situation, at least here locally in Toronto, where now we're on the brink, of course, of the month of Ramadan, only a few days away, and a complete absolute month where the center now will be open. Iftar, I believe, will be served. And so, you know, we're kind of moving a little bit away from the pandemic, although I do think that still some areas of the pandemic are still around, you know, remote working, et cetera, et cetera. So with this pandemic, the dynamics of the family now has changed. And we find ourselves alone with our families and spending more time than usual with our families. And some families have strengthened, some have really kind of succeeded, while others, unfortunately, have gone through some difficulty. And revisiting what our roles are, our individual roles are very, very important. So, you know, it's very easy in this session, for example, where, you know, the mothers or the wives or the women are listening in so they can sit there and pinpoint to the fathers what they're doing and what they're not doing. But this session is for us to, as fathers now, to look inside of ourselves and think, look, if there is a little bit of turmoil in my marriage, if there are some issues raising my children, it's very easy to blame somebody else. Blame the child, blame the other parent, blame the in-laws, blame the grandparents. And the problem with that is that everyone's journey beyond mine is out of my control. I don't have control over anybody else but myself. So I don't want this to be a session where, you know, we are using it as tools as things that I'm storing so one day, someday I can bring them up all over again and say, see, you're not doing this and you should be doing this. Point number two I want to make is I want to, first of all, allow all of you to understand, and I imagine that everyone right now is listening, it's not just fathers, that sometimes an avenue for a father to express the difficulty that he goes through doesn't exist sometimes in our families, in our communities, in general, at large. There are a lot of support groups for our mothers. There are a lot of support groups for our children, for our grandparents, for our seniors. And I say this, of course, me, myself, being a father of three, and talking to other fathers as well, that, you know, when you are, for example, the one who is responsible to provide for the family, you are responsible for the direction of the family, the wilaya and the leadership of the family is in your hands. Decisions that have to be made, sometimes that buck stops with you. And then, you know, you don't have the luxury sometimes of having a shutdown day. And I say this, and again, I don't want to, you know, cause enemies from the very outset of this program, it doesn't mean that the other parent or the mother or the wife or the kids don't have their respective difficulties. They do. This is not, I'm not saying that because one exists, the other one doesn't exist. No, if this was a session about mothers, I would talk about mothers. We're talking about fathers. And reality is that sometimes, yes, in this day and age, given all of that's going on, trying to hold a steady job, trying to provide for your family, the increase in the inflation in this local Toronto job market and the housing market, there's a lot of stress placed on the husband, on the father, sorry. And sometimes, you know, we don't take into account the anxiety and the mental health of a father. Because I don't know, sometimes maybe we think that the father isn't allowed to have an off day, a quiet day, where he can express the fact that, you know what, I'm having a stressful day. It makes him look like he's weak, right? And there's a whole process of now emasculating him, saying that, you know what, you need to pick it up. Doesn't matter if you're having an off day, you know, you can't afford to have an off day. So just a quick little sort of a shout out, or sort of like just to kind of stop and to recognize the fact that there are some fathers out there who are incredible fathers, who work very, very hard to not only pay the bills, but to pave the spiritual path as well. It's not easy to do that, especially during a time where the world is so, so fluid and so unpredictable. So, you know, I pray to Allah to give that strength to those fathers, to accept their efforts, and to kind of ease sometimes that mental stress that goes along with being a father. Having said that, I wanted to look at the verse from Surah An-Nisa today. I'll tell you where I'm going with this a little bit, okay? Now, I talked about things in part one, and I really am going to try not to repeat that. It's online for those of you who have not gone through part one. I suggest that you do so. The questions that I got were incredible during that first part, and I look forward to those questions tonight as well. I talked about the idea of the cultivation of an Islamic identity and how in this day and age, you have to now ask yourself as two parents or as a single parent, what kind of child or children do I want to raise? Okay. And then create an environment at home that is there to cultivate that identity. It can't be that we are simply a little bit fluffy and we are kind of skipping through the meadows and we are, you know, just, yeah, well, you know, trying to figure out the best of both worlds. It doesn't work. As I mentioned in part number one, you know. The other thing I mentioned was that the cultivation of that identity has to come from the wali of the house. And I said very strongly, and this is not up for debate, the leadership of the household are the parents. The two parents are the managers or CEOs of the house, okay? The expectation from Islam is, and the burden placed of leadership is placed on the shoulders of the father, okay? That you are now in charge, ultimately, of paving the path towards God for your children. It's not the mother. If she's helping you and supporting you in that, that's her love, that's her compassion. Ultimately, the burden, it is a burden. The weight of that is on your shoulders. Why? Because you can bear it. Because God has given you that innate nature to bear that weight. Okay? And that's where I want to segue into the 34th verse of Surah An-Nisa, a very famous verse. I just want to look at the opening line that says, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, ar-Rajalu qawamuna ala an-Nisa. That the men or man is the qawam of the woman, okay? To understand a little, because a common complaint I get from fathers, and you know, lately, unfortunately, my phone blows up now, unfortunately, with a lot of domestic issues from divorce to, you know, to a disconnect between a husband and the wife. And the common complaint I get from fathers is a lack of respect from their family. To a father, everything goes back to respect. If they can earn the respect, or they have the respect of the child and of the other parent, then that father is happy. Okay. The problem is that that respect has to be earned. Yes, you have that sort of generic cliche respect that you have, that I have, let's say, as the father of the house. Fine. You know, I am, let's say, for example, the father of the house and the husband of the house. I have that respect given to me by my title. Fine. That's not the respect I'm talking about. The respect is that when your family now trusts you to take them to a certain direction, that if you say, for example, to your family, to your spouse, to your children, that look, I really think we should start to kind of do this. Trust me, I think it's going to happen. I think this is going to be good for our family. Your family has to buy into your vision, has to buy into your leadership. And that respect that comes with a complete buy-in. Now, that only happens when they have confidence in your ability. So, you know, sometimes the problems with fathers is that they want the respect without putting forth any effort to gain that level of respect I'm talking about, okay? So walking around the house saying, I'm the father of this house, I'm the husband of the house, I'm the man of this house, that's given. I mean, that's kind of, you know, that's obvious, but that won't earn you respect. Raising your voice, you know, showing your authority through discipline, and through harshness, and through rough words, and through, God forbid, obscene language, is not the respect I'm talking about. I mentioned this point in part number one. I'll mention it here again because it fits. If we want, as fathers, the wilaya of the house, we want to be known as the man, as the leader of the house, then we have to now adopt the sunnah and the custom of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Innama waliyakum Allah, the Quran says. Surely your wali is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Your leader, your master is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And you have to look at that wilaya on a vertical plane, where the utmost summit, the climax, and the peak of that wilaya is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Nobody else. We're not replacing the father with God. We're not even replacing the imams with God. We're not doing that. Okay? What I meant to say was we're not replacing God with the father or God with the imams. Even though, you know, our wali is Imam Zamana, our wali is Imam Hussein. And yes, to some degree, the wali is the father inside the house. That is on a vertical plane where there is a hierarchy, okay? Ultimate wilayat is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He is Maliki Yawmiddin. He is the master of the day. He is the Malik and he is the owner of everything in this universe. Now, if we understand that, let's see how he leads in this universe. How his akhlaq and how his behavior is with everybody else that is under him. And all I see is what? His rahmaniya and his rahimiya. Where now he says, kataba ala nafsihi rahma in the Quran, that I have made a mercy wajib upon myself. Now I see an entity, a creator, a sustainer, a God that's obsessed with what? With being merciful towards us, with forgiving us, with giving us chance after chance after chance, with even instructing his Rasul and his Habib, the Holy Prophet, to be what? To be soft with them. If you were not soft with them, the Quran says, you know, min hawlik, they will leave you if you are not with them. If you are not harsh, if you are not soft with them, they'll leave you, right? So if we understand the wilayat and the leadership of Allah to be something that now he extends a hand of mercy and grace and love and compassion, then we also have to mirror that wilaya. You see, look, it's very easy. It's very, very easy to oppress, to abuse the power that one has over individuals that they have authority over. So for example, it's very easy for a parent to, God forbid, abuse their child, be it verbally, emotionally, physically, God forbid, because they have that authority, right? They have that power over them. Not only physical power, but also in terms of, you know, the sheer responsibility and the sheer hierarchy inside the home. That's easy, but that's not exactly what we want. We want to earn that respect through, in fact, the complete opposite, to be forgiving with those who you have authority over, to be individuals that are displaying your mercy and your love over those people who you have authority over. And then what will happen is then you will actually earn that respect I talked about, where they are buying into your vision. So if tomorrow your father says to you, you know what, maybe we should stop going to this place or those gatherings or these events, it's not good for our spiritual cultivation or our spiritual identity, there's no sort of, you know, resistance. There's no, God forbid, where, okay, you can stay home, but we're going. Me and mama are going, or I'll take the kids and go. We're going to go have fun. You can stay and you can be Mr. Spiritual, but no, thank you. No, that respect that we want as the father, that we have to earn now, I'm sorry, is the idea that buy into my journey that I want to take all of you on. In order for you to earn that, you have to, first of all, tread that path. That's the part I think that is a disconnect. We talk about the fact that I want to raise great kids. We talk about the fact that I want an Islamic household. We talk about the fact that I want a household where Imam is Malik can walk in. And those are great, lofty goals, and may Allah bless you on that path. But the reality is that unless you yourself are treading and walking down that path, you can't expect anyone else to do that. And so, yes, we live in a generation, like it or not, right or wrong, we live in a very bold era. I have 14, 15, 17-year-olds calling out their fathers, calling them flat-out hypocrites. You tell me about Salat, you're the one that never prays Maghrib. You're the one that talks about the idea that you should talk softly, but you're always yelling inside this house. You're the one that talks about the idea that you should trust people and take them for what they're saying, but you don't trust me at all. Now, we can sit there and focus on the idea that, oh my God, this generation is horrible, they're bold, they talk back to their father, and that's another issue for another day. But let's stop and realize that these kids are bold, but they're also blunt and they're brutally honest. So if you are somebody that wants to have that respect, the buy-in respect, not the cliche respect, the buy-in respect, you have to earn that. And that's why the Quran now talks about the idea that you have to be qa'im when it comes to the people inside of your life. It says women here, doesn't mean a wife, doesn't mean, it just means in general, those that you could possibly have authority over. What does that mean to be qa'im? To be upright, right? To be honest, to be faithful, to be loving and caring, to create a home, an environment where a person can walk in. You know, sometimes you can feel the energy inside the home. Literally, sometimes I walk into homes, I could tell this is a toxic home within the first 5-10 minutes. There's an awkward tension inside the home. It's inside the walls of the home. You can literally feel you can sense the screaming of the walls. And then there are homes that you don't want to leave. There's comfort, there's love, there's smiling, there's a sound of laughter. You can tell this family now is enjoying the company, not only of their guests, but of each other as well. Okay. Now, another point about this verse from Tafsir al-Mizan, Alama Tabatabai, has an entire section about the walaya of the man inside of the home, the leadership of the father inside of the home. Now, he talks about men in general. I'm going to make it specific about fathers because that's our theme tonight. He says, look, you have to understand the rights and responsibilities of the mother and the father inside of any sort of family is not based on superiority or inferior, but rather based on the idea that Allah has given and created the human being with a certain innate nature, an innate disposition that you might have heard that's called the fitrat of the insan, where there are some things that innately as men we do that innately as women they're not expected to do, and vice versa, by the way. There are some things that our women innately are good at that we as men can never understand. the rights and the roles and responsibilities of the father and the mother inside of Islam are precisely built on that innate nature, nothing else. This is not a male-dominated chauvinistic religion. This is not a misogynistic discussion. It's a discussion on the innate nature. The problem lies, the chaos ensues when we, as mothers and fathers, begin to sway away from our innate nature. When women are asked to do what they're not built to do, when men are doing what they're not built to do. Okay? In that discussion, I really hope you guys understand that discussion. Okay, the sun has its path, the moon has its path, day and night have its path, time has its path, a man has his path, a woman has his path. And instead of now looking and comparing paths, we have to now be able to embrace our path. Imagine the sun becomes the moon becomes the sun. Imagine day and night now switch, chaos ensues. When every creation embraces their own path, embraces the innate nature that exists on that path, then there's harmony in the universe, in the families, in our hearts. Chaos, disharmony, absolute trouble resides when you are treading someone else's path. So there are mothers right now who are asked to carry the financial load of the house, the spiritual load of the house, the domestic law of the house, everything else inside the house, while the man figures it out, or the man is trying to get his business up and running, or the man, for example, just needs to shut down for a couple of months. So now she's asked to carry on a load that her shoulders simply were not created to bear. She's doing it. She will do it. She'll find the strength, muster up the courage, somehow the forbearance to do what she should have never been asked to do. Okay, that's not an inferior-superior discussion. That's simply the idea that you weren't built for that. It's like me asking my six-year-old son to help me lift the fridge and take it down to the basement. So you're on one side, I'm on the other. On the count of three, lift. And there's no lifting happening. If I was to get mad at my six-year-old, say, look, what's wrong with you? I say, Baba, I'm only six. I can't lift the fridge. He wasn't built to do that. So when we talk about the idea that a man is a qawwam over the woman, is that leader for women inside the house. The role of the father is just that. You have to be upright. You have to be somebody who's worthy of respect. Not the cliche respect, the buy-in respect. That if you think as the father of this household that this is a good idea, then so be it. We're in because we trust you and your ability, because you're not only talking the talk, you're walking the walk. We see you now become a better person day in and day out. When you invite us towards bettering ourselves, we'll accept that invitation. But if you're declining, if you are regressing as a human being, as a father, and you keep preaching about progression, eventually somebody will call you out inside the home and your respect is gone. And again, once that respect is gone, that load that shouldn't be on the mother becomes directly placed on the mother. And chaos inside of a marriage, inside of a home ensues. Now you have children who don't respect their father. You have a mother who's taking on way too much. And that, you know, literally blows up the entire environment. Okay? There's more to this verse, but I want us to realize that when it comes to what Allah is asking us to do as fathers or asking us to do as mothers, okay? That's based on the fact that He created us. So first came creation, then came the jurisprudence. First came khilqat, then came the fiqh. It wasn't as if God said to Himself that I'm going to make sure that all of the luxurious, quote unquote, items in the fiqh are given to the man. And all the difficult ones are given to the woman. No. Let me remind all of you, to be a leader inside of a home, it's not a luxury, it's a burden. You'll be questioned. As a father, I absolutely will be questioned. I gave you three children. What did you do with those children? I'm not saying that all of their actions are in my books, But ultimately, there's going to be a little bit of question. Look, did you uphold that right or not? Okay. So that's part number two of that. The other thing that I wanted to mention, just a few things here and there. How to earn that respect. And this is where we go a little bit into new age parenting. Okay. You know, growing up as a typical, a child to immigrant parents, I could remember on one hand, maybe the moments that maybe I caught my parents, you know, enjoying the company of each other. You know, so maybe we're upstairs and, you know, they're cooking up breakfast that's in a Saturday morning, and my dad's there, my mom is there, and, you know, he's cutting up the cantaloupe or the watermelon, and, you know, my mom is sitting there making the eggs and this and that, and he's warming up the toast, and, you know, and as I come down, I hear them laughing together, talking together, having a good time together, blah, 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 right? I remember those moments vividly, only because it really strengthened the idea that there's love inside of the home. Okay. Now, obviously, from a cultural standpoint, those moments were few and far between. The moment they saw us coming, they would separate like they were strangers. But that's just because of that, that's the culture, and that's sort of the dignity by which they were raised. Islamically, however, there's nothing wrong with a little bit of moments of affection between a husband and a wife, between a father and a mother, especially in front of the kids. Now, obviously, very limited, right? But the one thing that the father can do to really kind of speed up the process of respect inside the home. Remember, I talked about the buy-in respect inside the home, where now they're willing to, now what? Where they're willing to follow you on the path towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. One way is how the father treats the mother inside the home. I can't tell you how vital that is. I can't tell you. For a child to look back in their memory and their childhood and stop and think, and if someone was to ask you or ask them, did your father love your mother? And they say, oh my God, like Baba loved Mama. Baba was in love with Mama. I mean, they were best friends, blah, blah, blah. There is probably nothing better for a child than to grow up knowing and having this yaqeen and certainty that my father loved my mother very much. And how did he get that? Again, by doing things for her. By talk, the way you speak to her, the way you address her, what you buy for her, right? And sometimes it's important that you do that in front of the children. Sometimes as fathers, it's important that we all kind of show our children, you know, if that means things like telling your son, for example, that you better pray to God that you get, that you marry a woman that's 10% of your mother, then then you've done something good, right? Those kind of things go a long, long way. They'll say, oh, brother, oh, well, they're older eyes. But can you imagine the message you're sending as the father, that there's compassion inside of you, there's love inside of you? And you know what? It's not that you love your wife, you love our mother. It's a big difference there. So if we want to have that respect, then every father does. It's how you treat the other parent sometimes that kind of cultivates that respect. Okay? So think about those things, okay? If that means that, you know, you make a cup of tea for your wife, if that means that, for example, she's not having, you know, a good day, that you bring that tea or that coffee or that snack upstairs, or you cut a fruit, or you get your kids involved. Guys, let's make a snack plate for mama. You cut the pears, I'll cut the strawberries. Let's put a little hummus in there, some carrots in there, blah, blah, blah. And let's go ahead and kind of deliver it together. And you do that with the child, that's cultivating a beautiful, homely environment inside the home. And that, it's different. I'm telling you, when the mother does it, it's almost expected. It's mom, right? I mean, that's what moms do. That's unfair alone sometimes, is that, you know, when the father does the exact same thing as the mother, sometimes the father is, you know, oh my God, you know, like you're the father of the year. But a mom does it, well, that's just your typical everyday mom. That's a different discussion. One day, someday, we'll have a part seven. We'll talk about that. But before that, it's important that it comes from the father. Because that's not usually what you see with fathers. The other point that I want to make is that if we really want to cultivate respect and love inside of our home for us as fathers, because remember, what you want to do is you want your children, and if you have young kids at home, when I say young, I mean, you know, not quite teenagers, not quite baligh just yet. You want to create an environment inside of the home where now, you know, their first instinct as a child, when things are not going right with them, is to come to the parent. The first instinct is that if I'm in trouble, the one to rescue me is my father. Which means that as a father now, you actually now begin to instigate conversation. Okay? Small things like asking your kids how your day was. Not just, you know, how's your day? You know, how'd it go? Your teachers, anything exciting, any challenges, any issues? If it comes across, for example, your child comes to you and says, you know what, I'm having an issue with one of my teachers, okay? Behavioral issues, I don't get it, blah, blah, blah. Your first instinct should not be to sit there and say, well, suck it up, blah, blah, blah. The first thing is to say, look, do you want me to speak to your teacher? What you're doing right away off the bat is to say, you know what, I'm here, I have your back. Okay, I have your back. If they are facing some bullying at school, don't just sweep it off like nothing. Ask them, do you want me to speak to the parents of the child? They'll probably say, no, God, no, please don't. You're so embarrassing, blah, blah, blah. Okay? But the message is sent. I have your back. Okay? I will be your defender. I'll be your security. And the father does that. Okay? Because when the father enters that office and the teacher, whatever the case may be, it's a different vibe. Okay, my dad's coming to see you. My father's coming to see you. Okay, right away you think about an authority figure. You think about somebody who's coming now to fix what the problem is with his child. Okay, that's what you want. So now that when that child's 15, 16, 18 years old, and I'm not saying that it is foolproof, it'll always happen, they might know in the back of their mind that if they are stuck in a problem, if they have toxic friends, a habit they can't kick, someone they love that they shouldn't be loving, that they want to get out of, they can't get out of, maybe, just maybe, they might think about their go-to person, and that is the father. It all starts when they're young. It all starts when they're young. Okay? We live in an era where we have to have both parents involved in the raising of the kids. That's the bare minimum. If you are blessed as a parent to have a co-parent, if you are blessed as a child to have both parents at home and they're involved parents, meaning they're, you know, they're doing the homework with you and they're helping with lunches and they're, those things are things that you should fall down into sajda and ask Allah for help. Ask Allah every day to keep that environment inside of the home. Okay? So that's what we want. Okay. Now, the last point I'm going to give you, and then we'll open the floor for any questions. I think it's already been almost half an hour, is this idea that we want to now, if you have multiple kids at home, it's important that you do things with your children that are specific between you and your kids. Okay? For example, okay, like I'll give an example. The Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he would play with Imam Hassan, Imam Hussein alayhi wasallam. He would play with them. Some say that, you know, like the hadith says that with a child become a child. Okay, the Prophet of Allah would actually do that. Whether it's we have, you know, he would play wrestle, or he would, you know, he would play certain things with him, with them. But they knew that this certain game was a game that we only played with our grandfather, Rasulullah. This was our time with him. Okay? Do something with your child as the father. Individual kids, if you have more than one, individual kids, that they know this is a thing between me and Baba. If that means, and again, these things might sound silly to you, but they have a long-lasting impact. For example, handshakes. It sounds silly. Special handshake for each child. whether it's things like, for example, the month of Ramadan is coming, that you go out and you have, let's say, for example, suhoor at some place that's open 24/7. Right? It's an annual tradition. Me and Baba go, and this year also we're going to go. You pick a date, and I'll make sure that, you know, I wake you up, and we go, and we drive to some 24-hour place that's open. We grab a bagel or something else, whatever the case may be. Okay. Or, for example, you know, if you are a father who's into sports, like I am, for example, then, you know, when it comes time for the game, you and your kids down, watch the game together. But that's just something that you do with Baba. So you're creating these memories and you're creating associations with certain things where so long as you are there, that association is there as well. Look, this stuff is not rocket science, right? It's not some Irfanic mysticism philosophy. It's very simple. But we have to now move away from the cliche dad, 9 to 5, bring me my tea, leave me alone, I'm tired, this and that. That's not what today requires. It's never what the deen said. Yes, the father is the authority figure, but that authority figure leads with the hand of mercy, leads with the hand of compassion, always takes the higher road, always is upright and dignified, okay? Is not somebody who raises his voice, right? I don't know why we always assume as men that discipline only happens when I shake the walls with my voice, or I threaten, let's say, for example, abuse, God forbid, or this and that. No, sometimes I think the most effective discipline as a father is take a step back from your child. That only has an impact when you are that close with your child. Okay? So, you know, we want that wilayat, we want that leadership, we want the qawamuna ala nisa. Absolutely, we want that. But for some reason, we think that that means authority, if that means fear, if that means, you know, walking down the steps and everyone's like, oh my God, Baba's here, Baba's here. And yet that level of respect for sure is there, but not to the point where they now, you know, they can't wait for you to go to work. They can't wait for you to go run on your errands. If you're going to some program at the mosque, okay, thank God Baba's out of the house now for a couple hours. That's not the respect I want. I want it to the point where they respect me because now they respect the buy-in. Whatever Baba says, let's do it. If Baba says, let's go Thursday nights, if Baba says every night we're going to have iftar at the center, let's go every single night. I'm tired. I have exams. I have assignments. It's okay. Because Baba says so, I want it to happen. That's the level of respect that we need to achieve. And that is something that we need to achieve and earn. I'm sorry. It's not given. The cliche respect is given. But not in this day and age. And that's not what qawamuna ala nisa mean. It doesn't mean that a woman now and children and those who you have authority over have to simply just sit there and blindly follow you. I'm sorry. It doesn't. It doesn't strip the wife of her own independence. If she wants to, let's say, for example, volunteer at the mosque, if she wants to, let's say, for example, get involved in things that are Islamic and that are spiritual and that are humanity-based, this verse does not give the authority of the man to stop her from doing these things. I'm sorry. You may not like this point, but that's not what this verse means. This verse means that God has given you, the father, strong enough shoulders to bear the burden of the leadership of the home. You are the hunter. Go out and hunt for your family. You are the one that will pave the path. Go out and pave the path towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But do it with dignity. Do it with humility. Be upright. Qa'im means to be upright. Okay, change the narrative and create a loving environment and watch how they will flourish. These kids today, the spouses today, they flourish on love and compassion. We don't always have to now lead with fear. You might think that fear gets quick results, and it might get quick results, but it won't be long-lasting results. We don't want this idea of enmity to come with the fear. We want that level of love. We want that level of authority. We want that level of respect. But it has to be done through the sunnah of Allah. And that is with mercy and compassion and love and joy. So that's what I wanted to share with you guys all today. I'm really excited to hear about your questions. So let's get those questions going. I'm going to ask Sister Kaniz to come back online, if you don't mind. She's already back before I say anything. Let's understand. I really want to hear, like she said in the beginning, this has to be a dialogue. Okay, I'm also learning, and I also want to hear from all of you. So I assume you have some questions, Sister Kaniz, that are there waiting for you.
We have plenty of questions coming in, and thank you everyone for doing that. Just a reminder, go on to menti.com. The code is 5352 5357. I'll be repeating that through the night. So go on there and deliver your questions there. We're going through it right now. Thank you, Sayed, for that, for your insight and wisdom. I was making notes as you were speaking. There's definitely a lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
You know, especially about things about earning respect and not, it's not just given. I mean, that's something that certainly, you know, people of my generation, if you're Gen X, if you're a baby boomer, you grew up, you know, being told that, you know, that's it. And there's no argument around that.
Yeah, and like I said, that cliche respect, there is no argument. I mean, you know, you earn the respect with the title, for sure. Mm-hmm. But then I try to make it clear that there are levels of respect, right? You want to make sure that you have the respect of your family to the point, but when you are trying to take them towards a journey, they willingly now follow what you're saying. Or if it's your spouse, she'll climb in the car with you and you two will drive towards that destination because she trusts in your ability and in your vision, inshallah.
Inshallah. Lots of questions that we also had at last time. Part one, as we mentioned, that was about an hour long. And unfortunately, there were a lot of questions that were left unanswered. Yeah. So we've got a few of them that I'd like to cover at the beginning today. And then we'll move to the questions that have come in. And then just some discussion and comments about things that we noticed as well. So there's a lot of questions around the disconnect between the socialization of first generation or immigrant fathers and their children. We had about three or four questions that came in at the last minute about raising teenagers, and they were kind of struggling. So what I'll do is, it was almost two sides of the same coin. We had a child asking a question, and it could have been the same parent asking a question. So I'll read out the parent's question first. Let's have a look. So they say that, How do I engage with my children and help them if they're going through something that not even I understand or have experience with? And then we had somebody who's a child ask, my father's a first generation immigrant to Canada, whereas I grew up here. How can my father and I find common ground when we were raised in different environments? We were faced with different choices and we experienced different circumstances.
Yeah, it's a great question, common question. Let me address the first one. How can I help my child when I don't know what's going on? Sometimes you don't have to have all the answers. Sometimes when we walk in we have to kind of fix the way that we do things, especially as males, our first instinct is to solve the issue. And sometimes it's the process that actually is the solution, not any sort of result at the end, right? So if you walk in with a listening first or listening centric process, as opposed to a solution based process, then that's half the battle, right? So if your child does muster up the courage to come to you and say, look, I had this issue, and you listen without judgment, I told you right away, you're putting up walls. And as much as you would love to say, you know, I kept warning them. And now that they are complaining about what I warned them about, I have no sympathy. That's your choice. But if they come to you knowing full well that you have told them not to do this, they're coming to you because they're desperate, you know, and you are not able to actually answer the issue. All you can be at that moment is a resource for resources or a bridge for resources. So I oftentimes tell parents, if you don't have the answer to their questions about Islam, then find out those answers, because there's somebody out there who does have your answers. So for example, if your child is going through some mental health issues, and for first generation immigrant parents, that's a brand new concept for them. They never had the idea of actually facing your anxiety and going through stress and talking about mental health. And so it's all alien to them, right? It's a different language. The first thing is to acknowledge and empathize. That's half the battle, okay? When you simply sit there and tell your child that, look, I'm here for you. I'm sorry you're going through this. You're 14 years old and you have issues sleeping. You can't eat. Your stomach is always hurting. You know, you don't like school. You talk about, you know, how big your nose is. You talk about, you're weighing yourself on your scale every day. There's a lot going on with you right now. And I won't be able to rescue all of that. But the first thing I can do is say, look, you know what? I'm right there beside you. And I'm believe me, it goes a long way. I'm telling you, my parents are typical Karachi Pakistan parents. The moments that my father, Marhum, would sit there and would listen to me and empathize with me, that was half the battle. Like, I felt like I had, you know, it's like Popeye's eating spinach, right? You had all of a sudden these instant muscles growing up, right? Like, you just felt like, you know, I could do this, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's what it is. No one's expecting everyone to have all the answers. In fact, we have a very beautiful hadith by Imam Saleh that says, if you are someone that claims to have every answer to every question asked of you, you're someone who actually is, there's something wrong with you mentally. The word he uses is majnoon in the Arabic. Majnoon means somebody who's, you know, like not mentally stable. So no one expects us to have all the answers, especially in this dynamic world. I think that what goes a long way is empathy.
I think you're right. Empathy and compassion. And I think as well, compassion for yourself as the father, because it's very often that you try and hold yourself up to a standard that you yourself have created inside your head.
Correct.
And to be able to take a step back and listen.
That's
what kids want. They want you to listen to them.
That's it. And then if you need to consult an alim or someone, let's say, for example, with the mental health expert on the side, then you can do that. But half of her weight or half of the child's weight, let's say, is lifted when the parents simply empathize. If you sit there and say, well, you know, this is your fault, I have no sympathy, good luck, blah, 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 you've just kind of added more issues to the problem.
Another one that's come in about, again, on that same theme of disconnection. I think the wife is writing this one in. So when the father isn't present or fulfilling his role in Islam to his children, how should a mother explain that to her children as they begin to ask questions about his absence?
Yeah. So, you know, I, again, easier said than done. And I don't want to sound tone deaf here, but we need to create an environment inside the home where the parents are always respecting each other in front of the kids. I mean, that's parenting 101, right? It drives me insane when I hear about a father, you know, bashing his wife to his 13-year-old daughter. That's her mother, right? Or trying to use the kids as pawns in their game, right? To make sure that, you know what, I'm the better parent, your dad's horrible, mom is crazy, blah, blah, blah. And what you're doing, can you imagine an innocent 15-year-old heart that now is looking at these two parents? So I think that at wherever and whenever possible, maintain the respect and izzat of the parent inside the child's eyes. They themselves will begin to pick up patterns of behavior. You don't need to spell everything out. If they come to you and say, you know what, dad's not around, where is dad, blah, blah, blah. To me, and again, of course, it depends on how old they are, right? I mean, if we're talking about in their 20s, then of course you can have a real conversation. Someone who is still sort of in that molding stage, right? I mean, 10, 12, 14, 15, I think you need to start to make excuses for their father, only out of respect. If it's possible for you to direct the kids towards the father and say, why don't you go ask him and have a talk with him? I think that's better. But again, I don't want to overstep here, right, Sister Kaniz? I don't want to pretend like I'm an expert. I'm talking a big game here. I'm just kind of based on experience, right? And based on the idea that, you know, there is so much respect in Islam for parents that we have to now cultivate that for the other parent as well, right?
Yeah,
one thing Islam says that, look, you can disagree with your parents, you can't disrespect them. Right? Even if they are, the hadith says, even if they are idol worshipers, they command your respect. Now, it doesn't mean you go worship idols. If they say to worship idols, you say, no, I'm not going to follow you. It's not complete autonomy or authority, but the respect is non-negotiable. If that's the case in the deen, then we as a co-parent, we also have to maintain that respect as well. So we're not going to throw the parent under the bus. We're not going to bash the parent at all. He's, you know, he's a nobody, he's a loser, he's zero, blah, blah, blah. Never. But at the same time, I think it is important that the father feels this sense of accountability when the child himself or herself says, Baba, you're not around, or Baba, you don't pray namaz with us, or Baba, you know, come to the mosque with us, right? Those kind of things, I think, are okay for the kids to ask in their innocent lives. Yeah.
I mean, you know, we talked about a father being disconnected in terms of religion when he's in the house. But we've had questions where there are unfortunately, and I'll read one of the questions out, there are unfortunately situations where there's only the mother as a single parent,
right,
the father's not even in the picture.
Yeah.
How should women handle these situations, being the parent, the breadwinner, you know, everything, the mother and the father for the child?
So again, it depends on how old they are and the age of the child. I think it's, you know, there are so many times that I get parents asking me as a side note, and I'll try to connect, and I'm trying to keep these answers very, very short, but they're sometimes long-winded, is that, you know, it's like when your child comes to you and says, you know, are they Muslim? I said, yeah, they're Muslim, but where's their hijab and where's their beard? Right? Or how come, you know, they're hugging non-mahram men, for example? How come, you know, he's hugging, for example, a non-mahram woman if they're Muslim, right? And so at that moment, then you try to explain the levels of faith, levels of spirituality, blah, 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 pray for them, thank Allah, right? When you have a single mother, let's say, at home who's doing everything, and the father isn't even visibly present, and they haven't gone through a separation or divorce, then you can be tactful in explaining the fact that not every parent is alike. Every parent needs to go through their own process. Right now, you know, Baba and I, you know, pray for us. Right now, we're trying to figure things out, right? Again, you can be that upfront. Again, depends on how old they are, right? If they're 5 or 6, you know, shelter them from all this. If they are a little bit more understanding, if their intellect is now a little bit now developed, You can sit there and say, this is the dynamics of a relationship, of a connection between two people. That and not everything will always be, you know, unicorns and rose petals. That there will be always some difficulty, right? And we're just trying to figure it out right now. And maybe, you know, we need a break from each other, blah, blah, blah. That, if that's possible, again, looking at the child's capacity, looking at how much they know, how much you've shown them, right? If they're used to yelling and screaming matches, then they're not going to ask. They're going to know that, okay, Baba's gone, because they're not on the same page. If they're oblivious, if they think things are great, all of a sudden now one day they wake up and Baba's gone for weeks on end, then maybe you can talk a little bit about the reality that sometimes, you know, just pray for us. We're trying to figure it out. We'll come back. Let's see what happens, blah, 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 this and that. I think that it's okay to kind of soften the blow a little bit. But to come at it to say that, you know what, go ask your father, you know, you should tell where he is. I think that's going a little bit away from the Islamic value of respecting your parents.
So, I mean, you mentioned something very interesting there. I was wondering how this relationship between the father and the children, or even if it's a single mother, for example, how that changes according to the ages and stages of the children.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
A lot of mothers, especially single mothers, will say, look, I want to be honest with my child. My child's 15, yeah. 16, 17 now, yeah. and it's about time they yeah. heard what happened.
Yeah.
So they may go into details at that point. And then there's a very fine line, like you mentioned, where, you know, they may be estranged. There's still respect that needs to be had. There's still that child's parent. How do we do that at different ages? Or is there a guideline according to specifically fatherhood of children of different ages?
You know, it's a great question, very well worded. And the quick answer is that, you know, that's where your knowledge of your child comes in. Mm. I know what my 8-year-old can handle. I know what they can handle. I give them accordingly. That's a quick answer. The guideline that we have to go back to the famous 777 hadith of Imam Sadiq, where now he says literally anyone now in that third portion of the seven, so 14 and above now, it's to the point now, and again, it's a very generic and general hadith. You have to now partner that with your knowledge, intimate knowledge of the capacity of your child. But usually when they reach that sort of teenage years now, you know, where for a girl, she's been baligh for a good, you know, a good seven years or so. Sorry, 4 or 5 years or so. And the boy now is just entering his balugh stage. At that moment now, the hadith says that they are actually capable of giving you advice as a parent. They become your wazir. Meaning what? That the intellect should be so solid that they're actually able now to understand certain concepts that, let's say, they couldn't do it a couple of years ago. Which means they're ready. They're ready to hear the reality of it. And they'll come and ask you, where is Baba? Where's my dad? Blah, blah, blah. You can choose to sit there and say, you know what, things don't work out. You choose to sit there and dissect the entire story. But usually, again, go based on hadith, they give a lot of autonomy to this 15, 16-year-old, where you and I might think, oh my God, that's still a baby in our eyes. But here, Islam is saying, don't underestimate them. They may already know half the things that you've kept from them, right? Because they're very, very smart, right? And they can pick up cues very, very well. So I think that that's sort of our guideline as an overall rooftop view. But now in terms of, you know, on the ground, the reality is it's case by case. You have to understand, okay, is my child, do they have the capacity to understand the true story behind their parents, right?
Absolutely. And I'm hoping that, you know, people listening today, getting some, you know, words of wisdom, some gems here. This is really, really valuable stuff. We do have, like Sayed mentioned, last year's discussion is online. It's available on YouTube. Just search Role of a Father. It comes up. The mentee code for tonight is 53525357. So please do continue to keep these questions coming in. And they really are excellent questions. Sayed, I want to ask about role reversal here. So you did mention fitrat, and you mentioned our innate nature, that God-given nature. But what happens? How do you reconcile personality into that? And how do you reckon ability into that? Say, for example, I'm much better at financial, you know, the numbers and the money than my husband is. Is there anything wrong? Is there any problem with me doing the finances for the house, for example? And the question that's come in on that is, I, as the woman, am the primary breadwinner and I have more earning potential and my husband focuses on the kids. We agreed that this made sense. Are we setting the wrong Islamic example for our children?
The role reversal idea is that if it comes to certain dynamics inside of the family, for example, money, and the wife is just better at budgeting and financial management, and they've come to the agreement together that, okay, you handle the bills, blah, 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 this and that, that's fine. I'm not suggesting for anyone to be confined in a certain role. My only point from the verse of Surah An-Nisa was that there is an innate nature given to each of us. And the overall roles and responsibilities given to each individual is based on that innate nature. Now, if a reversal works for a home, and I'll be very honest with you, I'm a little bit weary of those kind of situations. I think that obviously you can train yourself. I mean, the fitrat is not always on, right? It's there inside of us. It could be buried in a lot of things, right? It could be buried in ego. It could be buried in a lot. Doesn't necessarily mean that it's always front and center. No, we have inside of our innate nature, we have this ability to worship God. That's innate inside of us. Inside of every human being is the innate nature to believe in God. Of course, we have atheists, right? These are people now who have turned off their innate nature. But that will eventually lead, I think, to some problems. So if you have somebody right now who is, let's say, for example, a woman who is out there 9 to 5, 40 hours a week, 50 hours a week, and the man is inside the home looking after the kids and everything, and that works for them, then I'm not going to sit there and say, no, force yourself back. But keep in mind that you're going against the grain here, which means that you really have to look out for triggers, for signals, for, you know, it's never a good idea when innately inside the heart of the heart, the woman feels or knows that I'm making more money than the man is. Mm. Eventually, you know, it might turn into something that's ugly, right? Where, you know, a comment here and there is given, or the man might wake up one day and say, look, you know what? I feel like I need to get out there and work. So let's reverse back, and she's too entrenched in her career to do that. So a lot of things now end up happening. If you're able to kind of work at it, like we have double income families, and a lot of families make it work, alhamdulillah. Some don't. Mm-hmm. The expectation again is on the woman to work 9 to 5, pay the mortgage with me, and keep the house clean and the fridge full. And, you know, that usually leads to chaos. So there's nothing wrong with the assignment of the roles, for example. That look, if you are a better cook, for example, then you do dinner, for example. If you are better at finances, you do, for example, this and that. If you're better at math or you're better at crafts, or that's fine. I just I worry, that's all. Sister, I really worry when those roles are permanently reversed. If, for example, the husband is not doing well, or he loses his job during the pandemic, and the wife has to step up, and she does, and, you know, yeah, I just worry. I'm sorry. I just worry. I have to trust the innate nature of God, and to know that his wisdom is there, that the men are hunters. Does it mean that a woman can't work? Of course not. My wife works, no problem. It doesn't mean that they can't work. Of course they can work. But the primary hunter in the family is the man, is the husband. And that's non-negotiable, right? And so maybe in the first couple of the years, 3 years, 4 years, eventually that innate nature might kick in. And that might have a problem in trying to, you know, set things right. That's all I'm saying.
No, that really helps to
assess. Sorry, I was everywhere, but I just sometimes it's tough to kind of nail down a position. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, on that theme as well, ask you for a bit more context, because we've had a couple of questions about not just single mothers or, you know, abandonment, where the father's abandoned the family. But there's even one here says, what if my father has a disability and is unable to perform certain duties that a father normally would? Is that role now shared by the mother? How does the family fill the gap?
Yeah. So obviously, I mean, if there is a disability, it's like Salat, right? Ideally, yeah. Salat is prayed standing up, bowing down. You can't. You're allowed to lie down, sit down, right, and pray Salat. So when the ideal is not possible, the next best option has to be accepted. So if, for example, he's not able to work physically or provide, then next man up, right? Next person up, as they say in sports. And that means that the wife now, you know, in her love and respect now, in her courage now, picks up the responsibility and goes and works. Of course, that's fine. Everyone else has to be a little bit sympathetic. You know, if it was forced upon him to not be able to work, know that he's probably not happy about that.
Mm.
Okay. Which means that there has to be a lot of compassion, a lot of sympathy, right? If that means helping him kind of schedule his day, right? Not making him feel like he's not providing, maybe relying on him. Remember, relying on him now for other aspects of the house, sometimes just to feel like, look, we still need you, even though you can't work 9 to 5. We need you here, right? It's important that fathers have to be made to feel, and call it the idea that sometimes we have a very, very, a very sensitive ego. We have to feel sometimes like we're needed. Okay. Even if it means, Baba, can you open the pickle jar? Baba, can you reach the top of the shelf? Like, there's nothing better for me than when my wife or my kids say, Baba, we can't reach the top shelf. You're tall. I go, I got it. And I get up like a proud man. And I get, okay, anything else? No, okay. It's just, it's pathetic. I know, but that's who we are, right? And if a person now, God forbid, is not able to work, then make them feel, if you can, like they still play a huge role inside the house.
Yeah.
And they're still very much needed. If that means, Baba, can you help me with my homework? Baba, can, even though you may not need help, may not need help, just kind of, you know, let him feel like, you know what, he still has a huge role inside the house.
Yeah, make him involved, right?
Absolutely, yes, yes, yeah.
The other swing to that is, what if a father, and this is from a father, is truly or sincerely trying to uphold the financial responsibility so much so that he has no time to give to his wife or children? So, for example, if he's working multiple jobs, running multiple businesses, he's just so busy managing the house or managing the administration and finances and working that he really doesn't have time for the family. What do you advise there?
I would advise that you, and again, this might sound, you know, blasphemous, but if you need to work 15-hour days just to kind of maintain a lifestyle, I would change my lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. Inflation, I get Toronto's housing market, I get all that. At that moment, you got to ask yourself, is it worth it?
Yeah.
And I think they know that, and it speaks to a bigger issue of keeping up the Joneses, trying to kind of maintain that rat race, and you can easily get sucked into that race and tell yourself, you know what, it's a matter of 5-6 years, Let me just kind of build my base financially. I won't be around, but after that, ooh, vacations and big homes and luxury cars. But maybe those 5-6 years are crucial for your family development. When they need you the most, you weren't there. Now that you are home, they've moved on sort of without you, right? So I, again, easier said than done, right? Maybe is it possible for you to re-examine your lifestyle such that maybe you don't require 15-hour day work days to maintain a lifestyle? I don't know. That's possible.
A lot of these are, I mean, where we have the questions and we're so grateful for these questions, but a lot of them are a judgment call, as you say, because yes, circumstances just differ so greatly in each family.
Yeah.
But we're trying to give, obviously, Sayed is giving the absolute best advice he can based on the question. So please keep them coming in. I'll repeat the code again, 5352-5357. We've got more questions coming in. Some of them around teenagers as well, that disconnect. So I've got one here saying, we talked about the 777 with the Imam Jafar Sadiq alayhi salam and the hadith about raising children. But this one says, what should parents do if they didn't bring up their teens properly or connected to Islam? Can we rectify this?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll tell you why I love that question, because that means that you're willing to kind of go back. Look, I want to make a couple of points here, and I'm going to be a little bit winded. Sister Khadiz, please don't cut me off and don't be mad. I promise. I didn't address the first question you asked me, part two, where the disconnect is the other way around. I can't connect with my father because he's from back home. What do I do? At that moment, you have to curb your expectations. Okay. We can't expect from our parents or our fathers what they were never given. And we have to give them the benefit of the doubt that if you ask them, if you ask your immigrant father about how he's raising you, he'll say, oh, I am leaps and bounds ahead of the way that my father raised me. Meanwhile, I'm looking at a father who's not involved, has no clue what's going on with me. Meanwhile, he thinks, he thinks I'm so much, I wish you saw the way I was raised. You ask his father, meaning the kid's grandfather, he'll say leaps and bounds.
Yeah.
Right? They just weren't given the tools. They weren't told that you have to be expressive with your child. You have to be compassionate. You have to be affectionate. You just once in a while hug your child. Tell your 16-year-old daughter who gets ready for Khushali Najashin, oh my God, I have the most beautiful daughter in the world. Stop and just look at her and say, you know what? I thank Allah every day the fact that I have kids like you. I don't think that there are better kids in the world than you. You know, I mean, that resets a child instantly. Do you think that they were given those words when they were in the Karachi or India or Africa? Of course not.
Yeah.
So I know that you want to sometimes to shake the faucet. Look, it's right in front of you. It's not right in front of them. They weren't given the tools for it. So that means you have to sometimes just invent an excuse for them and say, look, if they stop and listen to me, they may not have the answers. They may not even have the language down pat, but they're listening to me. That's a victory. So please, let's curb your expectations. They mean well. Believe me, they mean well. You are their number one priority. They will always be the ones who will pray for your success. Yes, they don't have the words. They don't tell you, I love you. They may not even hug you. Nothing, this and that. Maybe they're harsh, but that's their love. And you have to accept their love. Otherwise, what else are you expecting? Did you want them now to go to a parenting course? Did you want them now to sit there and say, I need you to change your ways? Do you really think? Let's be a little bit reasonable, okay? So that's the first part, okay? The second part is, let's say, for example, now I've all of a sudden, as a parent, woken up. My child's 17 years old. And I realize that, oh my God, we should have. What do I do at that moment? This is where I might even get some enemies, and that's okay. It's okay to share that with your child. You know, I took a parenting course in the Hausa. They have an Islamic structure course that was an elective that I took. And my teacher wrote his PhD on Islamic family system. And he said, the one thing that I wish we did more of, this was in Iran now with my Iranian, he was an alim, imam, amama, everything. Mm-hmm. I wish sometimes we knew the power and the impact that a parent has on a child when they go and they ask forgiveness from that child. You know, I read a majlis at JCC in my social justice ashrat for Muharram, where I talked about respecting your children. Mm. And I said that usually we talk about respecting parents. Today I'm going to reverse it and say you should respect your child. And my premise was, and I got a lot of hate mail for that. And the premise was that discipline, authority, nurturing, tarbiyat, all of that is in your hands. You are never to give up that authority. But it doesn't give you the right to what? To strip your child of their dignity. Mm. To tell them they'll amount to nothing. To tell them that I wish I never had you. To sit there and tell you, you know what? I have a loser of a child. Why can't my child be that person or that person? Islam does not, that's not what tarbiyat is. That's not what discipline is. Okay? Yeah. So if you've woken up one day and you're like, oh my God, I wish, go and talk to them about it. Say, you know what? I wish I knew now. I wish I knew back then what I know now about parenting. I just want to say, I know that things could have been different and I wish they were. And, you know, and talk about the fact that, you know, I wish that we did this together and that together. Right? And hopefully you've raised a loving child to know that this parent is coming towards me, showing compassion, being vulnerable in front of me, being vulnerable now. Okay? And that you embrace that. And you accept that. And you let that parent know that, look, Baba, you did what you thought at that moment was best for us. Maybe at that moment, you know what? There weren't jobs out there. Maybe at that moment, you know, whatever, you weren't feeling well, right? I don't blame you for all that. That resets everything. It may not be, you're not able to go back 15 years, but you can really pay the next 15 very well, right? I think that it's okay sometimes to show your child, your vulnerable side, especially as fathers. Like we're used to the strong, you know, macho man statue, you know, sometimes to show a little bit of the soft side. You know what? Maybe I shouldn't have blown up at you. I apologize for raising my voice at you. And right away, hopefully she'll say, oh, no, it's okay, Baba. Don't, oh my God, don't say sorry to me. That's so embarrassing. Oh my God, I feel so bad. But what you've shown is that I'm willing now to be vulnerable in front of you.
So I like what you're saying about softness, love, compassion. But seeing some of these questions is they are aware, and as you've said as well, that with great authority comes great responsibility.
Yeah.
So they have the authority, they have this responsibility. There's a question here about how Allah will hold fathers in particular accountable about wajibat that their children do. So this one is it my responsibility to ensure that my daughter does her wajibat? Will I be asked on the day of judgment and be held accountable? So how do we reconcile this love, compassion, nurturing side of tarbiyat and then making sure your children do their wajibat because Allah will hold you accountable for that?
Yeah, so it's a great question. So let's go back to God, right? Everything goes back to God. God's loving, God's nurturing, God is merciful, God's compassionate. No doubt about it. God's also somebody who will hold you accountable. God's also somebody who is the master of the day of judgment. God's also somebody who is just as well. So you can be two things at once, right? It doesn't necessarily mean that because you're loving and compassionate that you won't hold your children accountable. In fact, one can say that, look, that accountability comes with love. And let's remind our children, what exactly are our fathers trying to get us to do? You know, make sure you don't miss a music party downtown. Make sure that make sure you pray Salat. Make sure you come to the mosque. Make sure you read your du'as. Make sure you read your Quran, for example. Make sure you say salam to your mother. Those are beautiful. Those are things that are tickets to heaven.
Yeah.
Right? That alone is love and the compassion of the Father. So, you know, let's remind ourselves. That, and I always tell my parents now who are now become grandparents that fine, you're a grandparent, but you're still a parent to your child who themselves are parents, that don't ever stop parenting them. They listen, they don't listen, they who they are. I know, mom, oh my God, I'm a mom myself. They'll do all that, but you can't stop being a parent, right? So I just think that it's important that we do reconcile that. So yeah, I mean, a portion of your kid's actions is a reflection on to you. A portion of it. Now, right away, people will sit there and say, well, wait a second. Nabi Nuh had a son who denied him. The Prophet of Allah had family who denied him. You know, we have so many other situations. And you're right. That's why it's not entirety. It's not that you'll be dragged into the hellfire because your kid was off the path. No. Mm. The question more or less is not percentage, 10%, 5%. Did you give them all the tools? I oftentimes say this, that tarbiyat, nurturing, is a two-way street. For some reason, I think sometimes we assume that if I give a child a certain principle, they will right away apply it. They won't. They simply won't. I've told them between, I know amazing parents. Amazing parents. Amazing household environment from day number one. The child now is nowhere near the deen. I've seen parents who have no business having morally sound children. They have morally sound children, right? Mm-hmm. So there is a moment where that tarbiyat is give and take. So yes, I've seen parents give that tarbiyat and the kids refuse to take it. At that moment, that child is held responsible. You can sit there in front of Allah and say, God, I gave them everything you asked me to give. I can't force them to the musalla. I can't force them to wear hijab. I can't drag them by their neck to the masjid. They're 16, 18 years old. I can suggest, I can be a symbol of what I'm saying. I can be somebody who, you know, who basically acts on what I'm saying, and that's all I can do. I pray Salat out loud in my home with my door wide open. That's all I can do. Right? Mm. At that moment, God will say, you've done your part. Now let's hold the child accountable. You were given an amazing father. You're giving a father who's loving, compassionate, spiritual, everything. Why didn't you listen to what he was saying? At that moment, that kid has to have their answers, right?
I mean, there's even like, you know, we're talking about questions are kind of coming from a place of fear. You know, what will I be held accountable for? There's even one that says, but if we're forgiving our children all the time in this spirit of compassion and forgiveness, won't the children take advantage of that forgiveness?
Hopefully not. I think that that's why it is important that there is a level of authority. And that you do show that authority by, you know, by, for example, saying no once in a while, right? And establishing a certain rules inside the home that they live by, be it screen time or be it bedtime or be it whatever the case may be. You know, having a say in who their friends are, having a say in their Friday night plans, establishing your authority. So long as you're under my roof, these are my rules. And some of them are non-negotiable. Mm. That's it. You know, and so I think at that moment it is important that, you know, ideally what we want is that Baba is loving, Baba is compassionate, but when Baba says something, we got to do it. So even his anger now is accepted by the child because they know that coupled with that anger is love as well. It's hard. I'm sorry. What I'm saying is very, very ideal. I have 14, 8, and 6 inside of my home. I'm in the trenches right now. And I, you know, some days I fail. Some days I think that they go well. But I'm constantly worried. I mean, this beard became white really quickly. I'm constantly worried about my child. And we are having talks, my wife and I, day in and day out about our children, about what to say, how to say, where to go, where not to go, blah, blah, blah. And I mean, yeah, it's hard. It's not easy. Yeah,
it is. We're shaping minds as parents.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
There's a lot of questions between kind of the husband-wife dynamic where the father is fulfilling that role as a father. So I'll read one out here. I myself as a wife sometimes feel that my husband is so invested in fatherhood that he neglects giving me affection. I've tried to address this with him directly, but he says I'm being selfish. What should I do?
Wow, I've actually never heard that question before asked. He's so invested as a father.
As a father.
As a father that he neglects her as a husband. I think sometimes it happens unknowingly. I think that I'd like to think there isn't any sort of malice intent here that, look, you know, I'm going to I'm going to make sure that I put all my time in my kids, so I have no time for my wife. It's funny, I've heard the opposite several times, where, you know, she's just a mother and she forgot how to be a wife. And I would say to the moms, and I would say to the dads, you have to find a balance. But the first thing is that they have to be made aware of the fact that there is an imbalance right now. And then the father has to understand that, yes, you're a father, but you're also a husband as well. And then you're also a servant of God as well, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are moments now where we kind of lose ourselves in our relationships. So oftentimes, you know, with my sisters, I mentioned the fact that, look, you're not only someone's daughter or someone's wife or someone's mother. You are a servant of God, first and foremost, right? Don't lose yourself in your relationships, right? And so if a father is doing that, if he's so entrenched in the kids that he's denying someone else who does have rights over them, then I would say that's imbalanced. It's almost extreme. And that's not what I'm asking anyone to do. You have to now be balanced. In fact, I would argue that affection with your wife actually produces love and compassion for your kids.
Mm.
They're very much... Like, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying, it's like you were saying before, right? The best example you can show your children is where the mother and father
have that
healthy relationship between them.
Absolutely. I think that's one point that, you know, really hit home for me. Reading it, hearing it from my teacher, looking back to my childhood and seeing the effect that the kids have. You know, small things like, God, Mama, you're always laughing at Baba's jokes, right? And seeing that support that my wife gives my corny dad jokes, it just like, you know, fine. They're like, oh, brother, you know, let me guess, Mama, you found that funny. And she'll say, yeah, your dad's hilarious, right? Those kind of things go a long way.
Yeah.
And that comes when the husband and wife are strong. It's a top-down approach, right? Before you were a father, you were a husband. Let's recapture that, right?
Yeah.
And then after that, yeah. So, I mean, I think that if you're open with it and you tell your husband, look, you know, I need more from you, hopefully he doesn't say, look, I can be one or the other. No, you have the capacity as a man to be, you know, to be both, and both well, mind you. Yeah.
There's another father here says, how can a father deal with issues where the wife just isn't buying into his decisions or the decisions that the father suggests for Islamic upbringing of the children because the wife was raised differently? So back to that. We talked about that socialization. Right?
Yeah, yeah. So you know, if you have done everything you possibly can, and again, initially in the statement I made in my lecture portion was that, remember, you only have control over yourself. We have to relinquish the idea, relinquish the power that others have over us when it comes to change. Our change is not contingent on anyone else. We have to stop the narrative that I will change when they change. Mm. I will be better when they show me that they're better.
Mm.
You'll be waiting your whole life, right? You have control over yourself, nobody else. So if you've done everything sincerely, wholeheartedly, you can stand in front of God and say, God, I have done everything I can for this family, and my wife refuses now to follow my path, then you can't do much. All you can do is continue your ways and pray for tawfiq and inspiration. If really it is like a satanic lifestyle she's living, if, for example, she doesn't want to spend as much time in the mosque as you do, where you don't miss a single program, then you can kind of chop it up to different levels, different paths, different capacity. But I think that if there is no buy-in, or if there is the idea that, you know, she doesn't want it, not interested, you can't force that upon her. Hopefully, by seeing a change in your behavior, by seeing the effect and impact that your journey has on you as a servant of God, as a father, as a husband, maybe it might become contagious. But again, you can't carry the burden of the journey of anybody else. You can... go ahead.
No, I was just saying that's a great point. I mean, we've clearly got a lot of fathers, a lot of husbands sending their questions in today, which is really great. And on that same point that you just made, say... I've got one that says, as a husband, what should I do when my wife keeps asking for a divorce? With every fight or argument, the divorce card is waved. It hurts me. What should I do?
I'm a big advocate of counseling. I'm a big advocate of seeking out what is it that is causing her to jump right to the conclusion. Is there, you know, what is it about? Sometimes, look, and again, I really anybody out there who's a psychiatrist or a trained professional, please pardon my ignorance. I just, you know, sometimes you got to fake it till you make it. But I sometimes feel like people jump right to the worst case scenario as a trigger response. Mm. That they don't, you know, maybe that's their way of dealing with it. Mm. So, you know, if she refuses to go for therapy, or if you refuse to go through counseling, and again, JSS offers this beautifully. I have sent many, many people who come and talk to me that, you know, to JSS only because, you know, they're professionals, right? And they know the culture, they know the religion, blah, blah, blah. It's the best of both worlds. And I would highly recommend, we have to kind of break the stigma of counseling. I know healthy couples that go for counseling. My wife and I actually attend classes on marriage, given by Muslims and non-Muslims, right? And, you know, so that stigma that, you know, counseling means it's over. No, not at all. It means that you're willing to put forth the work into the marriage. If she's not willing to do even that much at that moment, you know, there's not much you can do at that moment. I mean, you know, if you're someone who's willing to work on the marriage and she's not, there might be moments that you have to scope out where she's a little bit vulnerable and she's not enraged and angry. At that moment, then maybe ask her, you know, what is it, you know, like, what is it that you think we should work on? What are your top three pain points in this marriage? And if you can kind of show her that, it's serious to me, I'm working towards it, maybe she might have a change of heart. Otherwise, like I said, you know, there's not much we can do, right? And carrying that burden on sometimes is too heavy for us.
I think it's great advice to be able to find those moments when you're both calm and there's nothing that's recently been argued about and you're both sitting there and it's a still moment, and kind of approaching the topic from a calm way, and even getting out of the house, getting away from the family, getting away from the children.
I think that those calm moments actually reveal a lot. Yeah. They really do. A lot is said in anger, and nothing will be solved until, like you said, you know, maybe, and I like the idea, offer to go for a drive. Let's go grab a coffee, blah, blah, blah. Let's get out of the house, a little bit of fresh air. Let's go for a walk, you know. And I've seen it a lot of times. They will let you into their world and maybe bring up things that are not even about you. Yeah. You happen to be, you know, kind of, you know, caught in the crossfire, but really it's about something that's buried inside them deep. Who knows?
Yeah.
But that comes out when you're vulnerable. Yeah,
it's true. And raising young children is hard. There's all sorts of pressures. That's a very, very difficult.
You gotta be kind to each other. You have to, especially young kids in this day and age.
Yeah,
I'll tell you. Sometimes my mom comes and spends some time with us. You know, she's here in Toronto. Sometimes she spends a week with us, a few days, and she sees how utterly involved we are in grade 3 homework. And she's like, I don't remember you guys ever doing homework when you were younger. And we're doing science fair projects and we're doing this project. And I'm like, that's just reality of it. Like I said before, it has to be both equally involved parents in this day and age, right?
Yeah.
And you got to give each other's breaks. If you see one parent now going down saying, you know what, I just need a break. Go upstairs, close the door, go on a numbing device, whatever. I got this. Don't worry. If we can't handle some dinner, we'll order some food. Don't worry. If you can't do it, I will cook something. I'll make a pasta, boil, whatever the case. Got to pick it up for each other, right? Yeah. Be loving, be compassionate for each other. Pick up on cues and be open. I need a couple of hours of break where I can't see my kids. Doesn't make you a horrible parent. Makes you a human being, right? Absolutely. That's where the other parent steps up and says, you know what, guys? Let's go to the library. Let's go to the park. Let's go for a drive. Let's go grab some ice cream, blah, blah, blah. They'll love it. She or he gets your break and you feel like you've done your part as a spouse, right? We need that compassion for sure in the house.
Yeah, absolutely. There's such an expectation now, especially with social media, to be this perfect parent.
Oh my God.
And give yourself a break.
And even with the month of Ramadan coming, please.
Yeah.
And, you know, like just, you know, like, oh, look, you know, we created the Ark of Noah, me and my daughter. You're like, oh my God, I can't even like feed them dinner without there being.
Yeah.
It's okay. You don't have to create the Ark of Noah. It's okay. You're okay. You don't have 1,000 popsicle sticks.
That's cereal for dinner again.
That's it. Just keep them alive for one day. You've done yourself very good.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So thank you everyone for your questions. Keep them coming in. The Menti code 5352-5357. Let's take a look at these questions. There's such great questions coming in.
Yeah, these are great tonight.
Yeah, they're really, really good. There's one from a gentleman who says, as a man, how do I balance issues in our household as regards to every time I try to take care of my parents in any way, my wife argues that the same should be done for her parents as well for equality?
Well, I mean, she's telling you what her pain point is. Again, I'll go back to what I say is you have to recapture the self-control. So you have control over it. If she thinks that there's an imbalance, you have two choices. You can sit there and ignore that thought and know that every time you go to your mom's place or every time she comes over, she'll point the fact that, oh, okay, your mom's been here twice in the past few weeks and my mom has not been here all month. If you're okay to hear that, that's fine. Or make it a point. And that means you write it down on your phone or whatever, an Excel spreadsheet, you make sure you're balanced, right? It has to come from you. Why don't we go see your parents today? Why don't we go have dinner with your parents today? You as a husband, reserve a nice restaurant and say, you know what, me, you, your mom and your dad.
Okay? And is that part of the responsibility as head of the household?
Absolutely.
That's on his plate, right?
I'll give you a hadith, okay? The hadith says that every human being has three sets of parents. The first set, of course, is your biological parents. The second set are your teachers. The third set are the parents of your spouse. The amount of, it makes me angry. I'm going to go off on a tangent. And you have to save me from going off on a tangent here. The amount of expectation that we have from the wife and the mother to take care of the husband's family.
Yes.
And to adjust and to sit there, and then that expectation is not given on the husband. Yeah. It drives me mad. I know men who will not even enter their in-laws' house because, your parents are old. I don't want to talk to, it's very awkward. Just let me know when you're ready. I'll come back and pick you up in a couple hours. I'll go for a coffee. I'll park in the parking lot, blah, 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 this and that. But you're asked, of course, to accompany, your mother-in-law to a trip for ziyarat or take her shopping or this or that, or look after her, blah, 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 this. It's just not fair. It's imbalanced, right? And if your wife is flat out telling you it's imbalanced, then balance it out, man. Balance it out. Her parents are an extension of you. Her parents should be seen as also your parents, okay? And, even if it's to the case where maybe your parents require more attention, maybe medically, who knows? Maybe she needs rides for procedures in the hospital or surgeries. That's obviously no wife would sit there and say, don't take your mom for these appointments. But if that means that my parents are healthy and well, they don't need that attention, it doesn't mean that they should be denied that attention. Like I said, going over, taking some food over, going out for a walk, this and that, picking up mom and dad, let's go downtown. It has to come from you. Okay. If that means that you and your father-in-law can't sit together and have a conversation, then sit there in awkward silence. I don't care. But physically be there in their company. Show her that, look, this is very important to you, so it's important to me as well. I can't tell you how strong of a relationship it becomes when both sets of parents of each spouse are looked after by each spouse. Like sometimes, the love I have, let's say, for my wife when I see how well she's with my mom, or vice versa. Sometimes, when I randomly call my mother-in-law to check up on her, see how she's doing, that day, I can do no wrong in my wife's eyes, I'm telling you. It's like, oh, you're the best. Yeah. It doesn't take much. And if they're flat out telling you there's an imbalance, then you can fix it. So fix it.
It's interesting, it. This cultural approach that we have where, I know the people from my generation, I'm Generation X, so the people my generation were told, when you get married, your in-laws are your parents now, your parents are not your parents anymore. Or they used to raise, I know people who've been raised where the father or mother has raised them as a daughter that they've been born to belong to someone else.
Right, right.
Right? And then when you get married, you're now fulfilling that your prophecy and your parents are no longer your parents. They aren't biologically, but your sense of loyalty and being a child is now directed to your in-laws.
I never understand it. And a lot of your viewers will tell me that, because you are a Western a young man, that's why you don't get it. But I know in-laws that get their son married and their daughter-in-law comes in their home and they tell them, this is your home now, forget that other home you were in.
Yes.
What are we talking about here? Like, do you think that's the deen? And then the husband actually sits there and supports that and saying, look, you can't go to your mom's house? In what, in which, in forget Islam, in humanity, just become a human being, right? Mm. In humanity, you really want to sit there and keep your wife away from her mother, and you think that there'll be happiness, and then you're confused as to why she's depressed and why she's always crying, Mulana, and why is there's such a black cloud over our marriage? Baba, let her go to her mom. In fact, you escort her, you take her there with you. Oh my, it's sometimes I tell you, I just want to shake. Yeah.
I always think we should have a session that says culture versus Islam.
Yes, you know? yes.
And separate these two out.
Don't get me wrong. There's beautiful things in our culture. True. Absolutely beautiful things in our culture. Some things drive me mad. Other times, I'm proud of the fact that we belong to this, whatever you want to call the culture. I think there are some beautiful things that we can see right now in this society, in this world, is lacking, right? But it does go sometimes a step too far.
So there's a couple that have come in where, again, we're talking about role reversal here. So I'll read them both out to you, then you can choose which order to answer them in.
Sure.
First one, and they're kind of heartbreaking. I'm a single mom and their father is not present. He has left the deen. I have been doing it all, alhamdulillah, but it's honestly exhausting. How do I keep moving forward every day? Will it get easier?
Yeah, that's a. First of all, whoever asked that question, may Allah bless you and give you more
Absolutely.
Strength. I would love to have a session one day on single moms. I think they're not appreciated enough, and I think that sometimes the cream of our community in terms of our youth come from single moms. Quite incredible how they're able to hold down the fort and still raise like angelic children. There's a palace waiting for you in heaven, inshallah. There's no
inshallah,
doubt about that.
Inshallah.
I just I think that. I oftentimes say this to young mothers. When I say young mothers, I mean moms with young kids, is that there are seasons of life.
Mm.
And sometimes when we are going through a certain season, you know, like today in the afternoon after Zohar, I looked outside my window and I saw snow coming down in Toronto. And I thought to myself, come on, man. Like I can see the ending of winter. It's almost there. The snow is melting. Just hold tight. It's not always going to be cold outside, right? You know, the weather statements are going to become few and far between. As long as you're able to understand that the season that you are in right now is temporary, there is another season waiting for you.
Mm.
Not everything you go through will be in this one season. It's not winter 24 hours a day in this country. And in fact, when you go to the other season, you actually begin to look back and appreciate the first season, even to the point where you might even miss certain things, okay? Like, for example, you know, I'll never forget the day, and I tell this all the time, I'll never forget the day that, you know, and I was waiting for the day where all three of my kids go to school. And we were very, very close. And my youngest guy now started school a couple of years back, and I remember the day that I dropped all three to school. And I came home, it was just me and my wife. Pin drop silence. Nobody, no kids, no breakfast, nothing. And we assumed that we would be on cloud nine. We can't wait. We sat there and, you know, we shed a tear. We were quiet. We were a little bit down. It's eerily quiet. It's funny how when we were in that season of diapers and vomit, we couldn't wait for that day, you know, blah, blah, blah. Now we're in this season and we kind of miss. So that's kind of the nature of the human being, right?
Yeah.
So it won't always be like this. Mm. With the season now comes a different set of challenges, blah, 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 this and that, right? There'll come a moment where it's too hot outside, for example, right? You know, so those kind of things we have to always remind ourselves. We know them, but we become so entrenched in the season, we think this is exactly how my life is always going to be. It's not always going to be like that. There'll come a moment when the season will change, and with it will come other new blessings and new challenges. It won't always be like that. The second thing I want to tell that single mom is that God sees your effort.
Mm.
No one else will. Nobody will sympathize with you. Nobody will understand your pain. And you'll expect somebody to understand your pain. And nobody will. You can tell by what they ask of you sometimes that they are so tone deaf that, don't you know I have kids to raise? I'm by myself. How do you expect me to end up being here when I'm the only person inside the home, right? Mm. So that level of sympathy, empathy may not be there, but the one who does empathize with you is God. God sees those things behind closed doors, those moments where your kids are asleep, you're in bed, you're too tired to eat sometimes, and you're just sitting there and tears are rolling down your face, and you think no one sees you, me cry, God sees you cry. Mm. God sees you cry. The Hadith says that God is with the heartbroken. God is with the heartbroken. He's not with the infallibles. He's not with the ones who are the awliya of God only. He sometimes are with those people who simply can't get through one Maghrib namaz without some issue and some difficulty.
Mm.
And yet you still get up and you do wudu, you put on your namaz chadar, and you try to get through four rakats of Isha. He sees that and he loves that. He summons the angels. He says, look at my insan that you thought was bloodthirsty and corrupt. Look at her now. Mm. After putting her kids to bed, she barely has enough energy to stand up, but yet she's still right now in ruku and sujood. That level, understand that God is hadir and nadir. He's present and he's watching. Sometimes those moments now get you through, and then the next morning you wake up with renewed energy to get through it. But it's not always going to be like that. It's not. It's not.
Inshallah.
Hope that helps.
A situation, and this is an interesting one, because of my family situation, I am the father figure for my younger sisters.
Yeah.
I want to know in Islam, what are the rights of the brother, and some advice on how I can get my sisters to listen to me. So this role and responsibility of the father, does it also apply to people who are father figures?
Not directly.
Okay.
You know, Islam does accept the idea that it takes a village, as they say. And so, we do rely heavily on sometimes the older siblings to help us out, only because that connection is different, right? The other thing that I think sometimes is important as older siblings is to kind of go through a training ground. You know, one thing I forgot to mention in my opening lecture is that one thing that I would love to see fathers do more of, if you have boys at home, mm-hmm. is to prep your boy in being a father one day.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked again about this on the minbar, about the sheer imbalance in raising our kids. We prep our girls when they're 9 or 10 years old, that one day you'll be a wife, one day you'll be a mother, one day you'll be a daughter-in-law, and do this and do that and do this, how to sit, where to sit, what to say. But we don't do that enough with our boys. And I think that it's important that we do that. So part of the way you can do that is to ask your elders, your eldest child, let's say, for example, let's say it's a boy, to kind of be a father figure for their younger sisters. Now, those sisters won't give the same respect to the brother.
Mm.
They'll be a little bit more open in perhaps rebelling or talking back. That comes with the territory, okay? But that's where the parents now have to step up and say, look, that's your older brother, have some respect. Now, I'm assuming by the question is that the actual father may not be around, so he's kind of inherited that role, whether or not he likes it. He has to, again, it's my favorite term nowadays, curb his expectations.
Mm.
To sit there and say, look, they're not my daughters, they're my sisters, I'm not their father per se. Yes, I'm a father figure, and they will learn to respect. So now he has to earn even more that respect by saying, look, I'll buy you clothes. I'll make sure that you are well fed. I'll look after you the same way dad would have, blah, 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 this and that. And then that respect will come, right? So he needs to be a little bit patient, that a father figure and the respect that he gets will not come as quickly as a father gets, obviously, right? The father gets it like on the ground running. The father figure has to earn that a little bit more. And you do that with service, right? Whether it be being there emotionally, being there financially, whatever the case may be, right? I think that's important. So be patient. If you are a father figure, be patient, be sincere, right? Let them feel like, you know what, I'm not alone, but that respect will come a little bit later than usual.
Thank you for that. This is a wonderful question. I am failing in all the aspects as a father mentioned in tonight's lecture.
Ya Allah.
How do I turn the page? How do I flip the script and make a change? Where or how can I start? I don't know where to begin.
Okay, good question. I think a lot of us are like that. Mm. The first thing I'm going to ask you to do is is be fair to yourself. Mm. My question to him, if he was in front of me, is how are you measuring failure? That's a big word. Number one, it could be that you think you're failing when actually you're not. The second thing is that, you know, there are certain things that I personally struggle with in my own self-development. I can't get myself to do. I'm trying to work on that. And, you know, my wife always talks about the 2-minute rule. So do something, whatever's part of it, for 2 minutes only. Just start it. If that means that you've always wanted to write a book, let's say, for example, mm-hmm. you could just never get down to it. Just start writing for 2 minutes mm-hmm. and close it. So whatever you think that you need to do, it might be a long laundry list. Who knows? Pick one of those things and do that for 2 minutes a day. If that means that I've always told myself that I'm going to, for example, I don't know, drop off my kids to school or ask my kids how they're doing or buy something for my children. You know, on your way home, let's say, for example, from work, buy them a lollipop. So something small, right? We have to look at the massive entity of being a father into pieces. Because when you start to kind of change piece by piece, the response you get from your child will be greater than you expected. Mm. I think it's incredible how kids respond to a change in their parenting of their parents. If, for example, a mother becomes more affectionate overnight, becomes more affectionate, you know, she obviously trained herself now to make sure that before they go to school, give them all a nice hug. Or, you know, a little small post-it note in their lunch bag, have a great day, love mom. Small things, the kid will come home skipping from school. So you can't look at it as a massive, sometimes literally window by window, right? You know, in airplanes, we're at the window seat, we're taking off, let's say, for example, and we're leaving, let's say, for example, Najaf or Karbala or something else, and we see the city in a window size this big, nothing bigger, and block by block by block. We don't see the entirety until we're way, way up in the air. Sometimes we have to look at our massive issue that we think, window size by window size. They're not very big. Tackle that one issue. That will give life to another issue. You know, the examples that the ulama have given inside of our books is, you know, building a long-lasting fire. You don't put massive logs in the fire pit. You put the massive logs on the outside of the fire pit. You put small twigs, you put small pieces of paper, you put small fire starters inside of the actual pit. And you light those very small twigs on fire first. The fire from the small twigs will now, of course, burn the large logs. If you go right for the large ones, then the fire will burn out, right? So same idea. If we want to make a change as a father, it has to be very, very small, but consistent. Mm-hmm. The small twig will now, of course, build towards a larger fire. So I want you to take the massive, it's a big statement, and it's heartbreaking to know that you failed as a father. Be kind to yourself. Nobody out there is saying to themselves, oh yeah, I'm going to mess these kids up. You watch what I do. No one does that. Mm. No one has that intent, right? There's no there's no malice intent to mess up kids. If you think that after 15, 16, 18, 19 years, my kids are not where I should be, so I failed as an entire parent, that's a lot for you to handle. Yeah. I think that you did what you thought was best. If we can go back in time, that would be great, but you can't. Now is the time for you to move forward, but be kind to yourself.
Brave and courageous for that person who wrote in. I mean, that's just
that too.
Courage
that too.
Right there, right?
I think to me, the first step has already been taken, right? I think that's the first step. And I commend that individual, whoever it is, and I think there's lots of people out there like that. Yeah. But again, like I said, take the massive undertaking and break it down into smaller bites that you can actually now work with, inshallah.
Inshallah. Like you said, trust is built in the small moments.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Got another one here. Again, husband and wife dynamic, but as a role as a father. So what happens if you are a father that's polite and nice with your spouse, but your wife is unloving or passive aggressive? Is it always default the father's fault because he has wilayat?
No, it's not. Wallahi doesn't mean that that she has no independence in her actions, right? Mm. Wallahi does not give her the rights to be passive aggressive or this and that. And yeah, sometimes I've seen there are great fathers, great husbands, and who don't get the respect and love that they deserve inside the home. You know, the wife is rough with him, the kids are disrespectful, and he's put forth all the right moves and the right tools to create a loving environment. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that if you have the walayat and leadership that you can now, you know, like a magic wand now create angels inside of your home. No, she still has the freedom to act the way that she wants to act. It'll go back to the idea that you have to sometimes just kind of grin and bear the fact that I don't have control over her behavior. Mm. You know, you can be vocal about it. There should be that level of openness between the marriage to say, look, you know what, these comments I don't like, right? If that means that, you know, you kind of set a little bit of boundaries around each other, then so be it. But, you know, you can't take on the burden of someone else's akhlaq. I think we all do that. I think we all sit there and we think we're responsible for the horrible behavior of those around us. Yes. Especially if you've told yourself, I'm doing everything I can. You know, so I think that you to answer your question, no, you won't be held responsible. She still has freedom to act the way she wants to act. And of course, with that comes accountability and repercussions.
Yeah, behavior is a choice.
Of course.
Absolutely. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Sayed. I think that's the end of the questions. I'm really pleased that to everybody listening, thank you so much for hanging in there and spending your evening with us. And of course, I can't believe 2 hours has gone by so quickly.
Yes.
Thank you so much again, Sayed, for your wisdom, your insight, and your advice this evening. And of course, to everybody who tuned in and had Jai with us at JSS.
Thank you very much. I just want to commend you on a great job moderating. I think you're excellent. Thank you very much for that. And the questions really were incredible. And I want to thank JSS again for holding such a nice event, amazing event. When you guys do things properly. So I really appreciate that. And I pray Allah accepts your efforts, inshallah. Thank you very much.
Inshallah. Thank you so much. And for everyone who did stay tuned with us right to the end, although you've only seen the two of us on the screen, there are a lot of people behind the scenes involved in putting together these events, and I'd be remiss not to mention the JSS team in its entirety, especially our wonderful chairperson Nafia Abdul Rasul, and of course our very own Ali Raza Jaffer, who's behind the scenes here, and the entire JCC AV team that managed the technical aspects of the session flawlessly. So thank you so much for that. Again, Sayed, thank you very much for your wisdom and
your
insight.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
I hope everybody gained something from this evening. And if you want to follow us along for more events, you can follow us on Instagram. You can go to our website, jaffrey.org/JSS. And we can keep in touch with more events. We wish you all the wonderful rest of the week and a very blessed and holy month of Ramadan.
Thank you very much. Wassalamu alaikum.
Wassalam.
Thank you.